Fusion Patrol is brought to you in part by our patrons at patreon.com/fusionpatrol. We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I am Eugene.
And I am Ben.
And tonight we are looking at the third series, Blake 7 episode, Dawn of the Gods, by James Foley. The Liberator is having some course problems. Orak says everything's behaving normally. Zen says nothing's wrong. Nonetheless, they are having course problems. It is slowly and painfully revealed that they are heading into a black hole, a force so great nothing can escape. The Liberator crashes into the black hole and surprisingly finds out that it's a little pleasant inside, a bit dark perhaps, but plenty of gravity, nice air, strange metallic sort of car-like things trying to eat the Liberator, and the Tharn, a mystical creature from Kali's planet Auron's history. One of the creatures from the time of, you guessed it, the Dawn of the Gods. It seems the Tharn is here in his own homemade black hole, trying to take over the universe by harvesting the power of gravity. The gravity of the situation does, in fact, catch up to him, and everyone escapes. The Tharn's world is destroyed. Yeah. Okay, so, Dawn of the Gods. Has there ever been a more misnamed episode of Blake 7 to date?
That's a good question. I hadn't really considered that.
This is because it's such a completely and utterly pointless time. I mean, okay.
Although there's a reference to it.
Yes, maybe Mission to Destiny was... Well, no, that's actually... They were on a mission to the planet Destiny, so that was actually kind of a good name. It's just such a weird... It's just a weird thing. I mean, the Dawn of the Gods is a thing that happened in the mythology a long, long time ago. This is not like the fulfillment time when the Tharn comes back to create the Dawn of the Gods or anything like that. It's just, it really kind of struck me in the middle of this episode. This is just like one of the worst named episodes there is. Yes, they mentioned it, but they might as well have called it a bald dwarf. It would have been probably more accurate in its story, but neither here nor there. How did you enjoy the episode?
Well, let's just say this episode was my ring around the moon. And I mean that seriously. I had to watch this thing 3 times because I kept falling asleep while watching it.
Yeah. It's not a very good,
not really,
episode. This is definitely not what I would bring people in on.
No, not in the slightest.
It has one thing going for it and one thing only, and I'm going to say that so that we have something positive to say about it at some point. I guess we could also say that it has some character pieces in it, and I'm wondering if that's the writer, James Foley, or that's Chris Boucher's contribution as the story editor trying to bring it around. We start off, and they're playing Space Monopoly. I kind of find that sort of charming.
Well, I was finding it charming until I realized, you know, my first thought was, nah, I really couldn't see Avon playing this game. Oh, look, Avon's playing the game. Oh, look, so's Orak.
Well, Orak was taking the game quite seriously.
But what about the game?
I predict with 100% certainty that I would rule the universe. Yes.
And they start walking away. But what about the game? Man, was Aurek just like way too serious about this game.
Yeah. But you know, okay, they're bored.
Obviously.
I think we have seen that occasionally, that sometimes when they're out on the ship, they don't have anything to do, especially when they're not on a Blake crusade to save the universe. So,
Or to find Blake.
Okay, you have a choice. You could try to go find Blake, or you could play Space Monopoly. See, you're wondering why Avon is playing Space Monopoly, and there is your answer.
You'd rather play that than try and find Blake.
Hey, he's got the ship for the most part uncontested, except for Arrogant Tarrant.
Yeah, Tarrogant.
Tarrogant, yes. But yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, it so easily could go wrong when you try to pretend like what people do hundreds of years in the future is the same. But I think Monopoly is a game that's kind of...
It has a timelessness to it.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, how many times has that game been reinvented?
Well, you know, when Blake 7 came out, not that many.
No, but since then.
Oh, yeah. Since then, they've made it every form imaginable. I think, you know, maybe that will be its undoing someday. But at the time, you know, they've made some changes. Obviously, we got a reference to Sin City in there. And obviously, they've built some sort of battle fleets. But yeah, I quite like that. And then the episode kind of goes down. kind of goes downhill. Let's see. It's even hard to come up with things to talk about in an episode this non-point.
It's all just really bad filler. I mean, it's this episode serves. Again, here's another one that serves absolutely no purpose to the overall series. And what bothered me is that at first I thought, oh, well, okay, this is kind of interesting. I mean, we've got this situation that's taking place on the ship. It's only on the ship. It seems to be only with the crew of the Liberator. This could be good. It could be good. It could be good. But it wasn't.
But it turned out that was definitely not the
case. No, especially when they... Well, I mean, there was some science-y stuff in there that was just really bad, but we will forget that for now. When they landed on the planet of the black hole, or world of the black hole, whatever you want to call that, I mean, at that point, it just really became...
Crandor, by the way.
Yeah, Crandor, yeah. By the time I got there, it was just, you know, I can't find a word. I really cannot find a word to describe just how lacking... The episode became from that moment on.
This is definitely not Blake 7's finest hour.
Oh, by no means.
We are, well, for starters, so the ship, there's a mystery. Let's start with a mystery. The ship's deflecting a little bit and doesn't make any sense. Aurek is giving what we later find out to be a typically cryptic oracle-like prediction. The ship is... behaving exactly as expected, which it is. If you were falling into a black hole, you would expect it to follow this path. Aurek hasn't been like that in a while. You know, giving the right answer, but no, you're not supposed to understand it kind of thing. So,
right.
Again, so we have a writer who hasn't written for Blake 7 before, and he's kind of latched on to the sort of maybe the Aurek that caused the DSV-2 to blow up. Over at Space World, or whatever they called it. I think it was Space World, wasn't it?
Might have been.
Wow. Terry Nation really has some great names for stuff, doesn't he?
That's how we remember them.
So, that's a little bit out of character. But we have Tarrant, who, if you know, Tarrant is still new to the crew. Although, last time when they were... doing their team-building exercises on the volcano. But as Dana, notice that they didn't really trust Callie.
Yeah, well, given that this is not exactly the first time that Callie has kind of fallen under some sort of a telepathic hypnotic spell kind of thing.
Tarrant wouldn't know that.
Well, no, Taryn didn't. That's true. So, I mean, the only ones who should know this would be Avon and Villa.
Right. But it's Dana and Taryn that
well,
are
but
kind
so,
of...
But so I can take... So to give Taryn a little bit of justification here in this, he doesn't know Callie. So he's not... maybe he's come to... Or he's not arrived at a point where he can trust her.
Yes. Yeah, yes. We could kind of... go that, but it's just kind of interesting. Oh, by going near Aron. Oh, Callie, what kind of powers do your people have? It's just, I don't know. It's one of the reasons why Tarrant is a jerk.
He is, especially in this one.
So I don't know that that's going to go anywhere. It would be different if this sort of distrust of Callie went somewhere, but it really doesn't. You know, later in the episode, she's not exactly taken over, but she's sort of communicating with the Tharn, mm-hmm. and that doesn't make them seem distrustful of her?
No, not really.
Not even suspicious. I mean, yes, they notice it. Yes, they sort of ask questions about it, but no, they don't really do anything about it. Whereas here, just the hint that they might be flying somewhere near her planet, and they're all like, what are your people doing? What'd you do wrong to your people to make them kick you out?
Do they have telekinetic power? Can they all kind of like, you know, think together and move the ship? He's like, wow, okay, let's give her the third degree.
But later when she's, you know, obviously had been talking in her babbly sleep about the Tharn, when they confront her about it and say, well, what was that all about? She says, I don't remember. You'd think that would be the time that they would be far more likely to say...
That'd be the suspicious moment, I would think.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, how come you don't remember? Could you be telling us the truth? Not so sure. Yeah, instead they... So, oh, well, tell us about the Tharn. Tell us about that, the legend. He's like, okay, well...
Yeah, whatever. All right, fine. Orak is controlling the ship and making it investigate this black hole, which he finds fascinating.
Fascinating.
Because it doesn't emit X-rays, which doesn't make any sense because it's behaving like a black hole, and the whole reason that black holes emit X-rays is because of the collision of
the collision of matter
into it. So, okay, a little bit wrong there, but all right, we'll cut it.
Well, I think the idea that it's not really a black hole, but a structure that can emit great gravity, not to the point of what singularity can do, but still something that can that can affect. I mean, it was supposed to be, as I remember correctly, the Groff tells them that it's not a tractor beam, not a focus beam. It's more like a very generalized beam. So it's like a tractor beam, but more like emits in a gravity wave.
But when we saw its picture in space, it was blocking out light as if it was.
As if it was, yeah, exactly. And it could be any other reason why it was doing that. But if it, like, were a black hole, I mean, let's be honest, Liberator would not be able to land on it. Villa would not be able to stand up, let alone anybody else. They would have been crushed.
Mm.
So it's not a black hole.
Except the Tharn controls gravity.
Yes, well.
So what I was going to say about Orak was that he has put them in this situation because, and I quote, I have noticed a lamentable lack of interest in knowledge from the people on this ship. This is the first time I'm aware of that Orak has, he's taken control of the ship before.
Yeah, but not like this. I mean, this is, doesn't he actually refer to this or their lack of scientific curiosity?
Yeah.
Doesn't he refer to it as like intolerable?
Lamentable.
Okay, yeah.
Is the term
But he just does not approve of this lack of scientific curiosity that anybody on the Liberator has, except for him. Well, you know, given what they're doing and given what their agendas are, I can appreciate the fact that they don't have a scientific curiosity. I mean, they're on the run. Avon wants to turn Liberator into a pirate ship. So having it be a scientific cruiser or an exploratory vessel is certainly not part of their agenda, which, of course, Orak, as we pointed out, finds that lamentable. So yes, he hijacks Liberator, and it's interesting, but at the same time, I found it annoying.
Well, also, I mean, unless Orak understands that this is not truly a black hole, which it's unclear whether he knows that in advance, but if he doesn't know that, then he has set himself on a path towards total destruction.
You'd think he'd know that.
He clearly must know that. So therefore, he must realize that that's not a real black hole and that they will not be destroyed.
And I kind of wish that somebody had said something in the episode, because that thought had crossed my mind too. It's like, well, Orak, if you think this is really a black hole, don't you realize that you are about to be just, you know, smashed from intense gravity? I mean, is scientific study that
what good would it do you?
Well, yeah, what good is it going to do you when you can't report it to anybody else? But in the case of Orak, Orak is probably the first narcissistic AI I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So in his case, I don't think Orak would even care that he could not share that information with anybody else. It's all about, you know, if I die in scientific pursuit, wow, what a great way to die.
Okay. They're collapsing into the black hole. Now, we talked about what a jerk Tarrant was. Let's talk about what a jerk Tarrant really is. They're collapsing into the black hole. And one, in an act of complete and absolute stupidity that is beyond my belief that Aven could do. Aven tries mm-hmm. to drag himself into a spacesuit so that he can apparently jettison himself from the Liberator, which is falling into a black hole.
So where are you going to go? Not very smart.
Same direction, straight down. So mm-hmm. I don't appreciate that when it comes to the character of Aven, because that's his stuff.
No, yeah, I've decided that scene didn't happen because it's not in character with Aven. Again, as you point out with the writer, he does not know who he's writing for.
Apparently not. And then, on top of that, Tarrant decides to stop him because we're all going to die together. What?
Well, you're all going to die together anyway.
Of logic is that?
Yeah, I know. I'd rather have you die on the ship than out there.
What actually is Tarrant's motivation there? I honestly can't understand what his motivation is. It's like, ooh, I can't let Aven escape. I mean, let's assume that he thinks Aven could escape. Why would he stop him? Well, what possible reason could he have for stopping him? Why not try to get your own spacesuit if you think Aven has a chance? He obviously thinks Aven has a chance because he's trying to stop him. So grab your own suit and escape. I thought looking out for number one was big on your list too, Tarrant.
True. Yeah, it's a very, very badly written for both of those characters. It makes the motivations, as you point out, make absolutely no sense whatsoever. Again, this writer has no idea who his characters are, because this is a very out of character sequence for them. I would have assumed that especially Aven would know better. I mean, if anybody else, even as they were getting ready to even fall into this black hole, say, for example, Villa all of a sudden chimes in and says, oh, what if I could put on a spacesuit? I could get outside the ship. And, you know what Aven would say? And where would you go? I mean, Aven would be the first one to know that just because you've got a spacesuit on and going outside the ship, at that point, I mean, it's logical to assume that had that really been a black hole or whatever, they're past event horizon now. They're not going anywhere except down.
Down, down, down. That's right. But I'm going to ask this question. Now, we are, let's see, we've got Power Play. Is it just Power Play and Volcano? And this one?
We had Aftermath.
Well, but Tarrant wasn't in there.
Oh, Tarrant? Well, I think you're right.
What is his motivation? I mean, not just that scene, but I mean, what role is Tarrant supposed to be playing?
When Blake's replacement?
When we had Blake, we had a sort of clear-cut dichotomy between the eponymous hero and Aven, who is also sort of an anti-hero, if you will. And, we had something to watch Blake's character development or character decline, if you will, through the line. But I don't quite get Tarrant. Tarrant is already a sort of space pirate to begin with. So is he supposed, you know, he can't fill the role of Goody Two-Shoes like Blake could from time to time.
Right. I don't know.
He sort of fills Jenna's role, but at the same time, Jenna, well, I mean, apart from the fact that she got a lot of bad writing for her, when she did put it in, you know, it was more practical self-preservation kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Tarrant just seems kind of distrusting and
his goal is
snide.
I feel like his role is just to be a jerk.
Well, he's good at that.
He's very good at that. But see, unlike with Blake, Blake was a thorn in Avon's side only because he, at least when he's first introduced to us, he's painted as some kind of an idealist. It got rather muddy later on, but that's what we were given. With Tarrant, I mean, I guess the writers thought, or Terry Nation thought, well, you know, Avon still needs to have someone who's going to be someone he has friction with.
Well,
okay, so, but they don't want to create another Blake clone, so they come up with a guy named Tarrant, who happens to look like Blake, but seems to be more in line with Jenna, but not really.
Well, obviously, you know, when you have Callie, and certainly Villa is no match for Avon, and I don't see Callie and Avon in an adversarial role, and didn't to begin with, so. And then when we had Jenna, we had the sort of Jenna could come over to Avon's way of thinking,
mm-hmm.
but she could also be in on Blake's way of thinking. So there
right.
was a sort of there was sort of like a wild card.
She was the swing vote on
yes.
the ship.
Yes. And Blake represented things that Avon simply did not believe in, that idealism and the freedom for all people and et cetera. Tarrant doesn't seem to have any of that. He's obviously a Federation defector. He's a skilled pilot and tactician, apparently, but he is a self-serving survivalist. He is more of an anti-Avon.
And yeah.
That is an opposite of Avon.
Yeah.
But in other words, he's sort of the emotional version of Avon. Avon is cold and calculating, and Tarrant is sort of a feeling same kind of person. It's and then Dana is kind of a wet blanket. I mean, there's not a whole lot.
No, there's not a lot going on with her.
So, but yeah. No, Avon, we all die together. Why would anyone ever think that? I mean, okay, that's the kind of thing that, and I'm not trying to make light of this, but that's the kind of thing you get in these families where, you know, one of the parents gets some sort of terminal disease and decides it's all better for the rest of the family
right.
to be shot and dead before they off themselves. I mean, that's just batty nuts town.
Yep,
and,
I agree.
I can't think of any logical or even, apart from petty, I can't think of any reason why that made sense for Tarrant's character to do.
No. Again, he's not an enigma. And at times I kind of get the feeling that he is sort of in line with Avon in that he, you know, given an opportunity, of course, he would love to be a pirate, but he's far too, as you said, he's very emotional. He's very brash in his actions and reactions that make absolutely no sense whatsoever. So that characteristic does put him at odds with Avon alone, but it still makes for his character to be a bit kind of hard to accept.
He's a muddle. I'm not convinced that he's a well-formed character. That's about the best I can get out of it at this point. It's like he'll just pull something like that and you go, I don't know what they're trying to get with this guy. I don't know how he would behave. He's a genuine wild card.
Yeah.
And that's fine when you're writing the Joker, but not when
not
you're writing one of the major characters.
No, I mean, he's coming off as a major character. I mean, by virtue of being able to issue commands to Zen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I believe we saw both him and Dana have their voice prints
yep.
recognized by Zen. So as far as anybody is concerned, he's a member of Liberator now.
Well, they did that at the end of Power Play.
Right.
Aven,
but Aven. I mean, but that shows that he is a member of the ship. He's not this character that's going to be going away, because if you're going to be writing a wild card character, that only works for someone who's not in there for the long run. And by virtue of having him become a part of Liberator, clearly he's meant to be part of the long run, which continues to confound me, because I keep thinking, well, so what's going to happen when we find Blake? And can I point out is this the first episode where there's actually been no mention of Blake at all?
I think so.
Which I thought was rather odd. I wasn't expecting that. That caught me off guard. But then, given everything else in this episode, it's a total standalone. It's a total departure. It doesn't really connect with the overall, not series arc, but just the overall momentum and direction that the series has been going. So, yeah, I could possibly see why maybe there is no mention of Blake. But be that as it may, we have our seven.
Let's pick on Tarrant for a moment longer.
Oh, please.
He, after they recover and Villa starts to moan or whatever, Aven says something about our hero awakes, or something sarcastically snide about Villa. And Tarrant makes a correct but sort of pointed comment about the fact that he didn't try abandoning ship. Aven then sort of glibly says, I count self-preservation as one of my finer points, or something to that effect.
Right.
Which is exactly Villa's cowardice, too. But
true.
And as Aven walks away, Tarrant goes, someday I may have to kill you,
may have to kill you, yeah.
And Aven just sort of smiles and says, well
many have tried, or something like that.
Something to that effect.
Yeah.
Why does Tarrant say that? I don't understand that one either.
No. Unless he's already acknowledging the fact that he and Aven are never, ever, ever going to get along, that they will always fight amongst themselves. I don't know. It just seems kind of like a strange thing. I mean, I'm not even sure if we saw Aven refer to Blake in that way in the early days of the show.
Well, he sort of held a gun on him once, but once or twice. But No, they've definitely set these two up as competing.
Total, very adversarial relationship.
So I think this is really kind of, you know, Aven is thought he was the de facto captain of the ship, and Tarrant comes along, and Tarrant thinks he ought to be captain of the ship, and they are literally just
locking horns.
Lifting their leg and urinating on
things. Yeah, basically. Yeah, they're comparing sizes, shall we say.
And, Well, let's hope that doesn't go on.
Oh, please.
For a long time. They arrive in their black hole. And they teleport. Well, you know, there's, like, space doesn't exist according to Orak. The teleports don't work. They send Villa out in a spacesuit. It turns out there's gravity there, and there's ground, and he wanders around.
And there's air.
And there's air.
But he finds out later.
Yeah, the hard way, by holding his suit. As you do in most space shows. It's like, oh, I'm going to – oh, turns out there's air here. Okay. And then there's this, well, sort of – now Tarrant, thinking that Villa is dead – dons a spacesuit to go out to fetch the body, to bring it back so they can put him in deep freeze so that when they get into space, they can give him a proper burial. This is the guy who a few minutes later was stopping Aven from trying to escape and said, well, now we can all die together.
Mm-hmm.
Again, what's up with him? It's like, that's the actions of the hero kind of guy at that point. I mean, that's
right.
What Blake would do.
Yeah, to give your fallen comrade an honorable burial, so shall we say, or burial in space.
Aven might want the suit back.
Yeah,
I could see that. But yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand Tarrant at all. I don't understand his motivations.
None. No, he really is. He's making me wish that they find Blake really soon, so they can get rid of him.
Do you think that when they get Blake back, they're going to dump Tarrant?
You know, and that's kind of the question I was hinting at a little bit earlier. What's going to happen? I mean, you've got, okay, you've got, you know, Zen slash Liberator. You've got Aurek. You've got Avon. You've got Villa. You've got Callie. You've got Dana. You've got Tarrant. There's your seven. So what happens? You know, and what about Jenna? I mean, there's been very little mention of her, you know, but I mean, the show's Blake seven, so we'll focus on Blake for the moment. What's going to happen when they get Blake? I mean, what do you do? I mean, you know, kill one of the characters?
Obviously, I think it's going to have to be a showdown of some kind.
Well, I guess.
Blake versus Tarrant, the battle we've all been waiting for.
Actually, yeah, I would welcome that.
So anyway.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Avon shot Tarrant in the back.
maybe that's why they're setting up Tarrant as a sort of...
So we can all rejoice when Blake comes back?
Anyway, Callie, let's just... Dana, we can just ignore because she does nothing in this
episode. She does nothing here.
She does one little thing as part of the good thing, but I'll get that when I get to the one good thing in the episode. Callie is getting communications from the Tharn, which is a mythical creature from Auron's past, and he's so lonely. I'm so lonely, Callie. And he wants Callie to be with him so he's not so lonely, I guess.
Right.
That's pretty much the Tharn's motivation, that wanting to rule the universe.
With gravity.
With gravity. He who controls gravity
controls the universe.
I believe that's
an old Russian saying. Well, actually, I was going to say that was probably a very old Fremen saying before they discovered spice.
Oh, could be that. Could be that. So that subplot's just basically Callie is being wandered around and lying on bearskin rugs and stuff.
Well, and it's also it's bizarre as a means to. Again, now we have a situation where Callie's role in this does not make a lot of sense. It's rather unnecessary because she's not being controlled. She's not being manipulated. All we get is a little bit of her babbling in her telepathic sleep so that it gives her an excuse to tell the remaining crew on the Liberator and us, the viewer, who the Tharn is.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's no need for any kind of further exposition describing who this character is. Well, it just felt kind of like bizarre. It serves no purpose except for possibly she's able to earn just enough of the Tharn's trust so that he releases that energy field that is just dampening all their weapons.
Right.
And then she shoots things
probably start shoot the heck out of the walls.
Right. And of course, Tarrant and Avon then effect their escape.
Right.
So that's the only thing, that's the only purpose that she serves.
Also, stupidest plot device. Did I get three in there? Maybe I should go for four.
Well, if it's got anything to do with Villa, it would be five.
No, it doesn't. It has to do with the fact that they let them keep their weapons.
Oh, well, they yeah, well, it's like...
You may keep your weapons, they're useless. Yes, the Tharn's technology rules supreme here, which is such an incredible cop-out for the fact that Callie just is got her weapon on her hip. She's got her weapon in her hand, practically, and she's just like, oh, well, you have to turn off the energy generators for me to convince to trust you. Oh, all right, bam, blast, 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 blast.
Right.
And then as soon as... an alarm goes off, and we hear that the energy dampener is down. Avon and Tarrant, who are just sitting there with their weapons on, just pull them out and start shooting people. This seems like the kind of thing that you could prevent by not letting them keep their weapons in the first place.
Right.
And why are Dana and Villa just put in a cell and not doing anything? I understand why they've got Avon and Tarrant doing mathematical computations. But
Villa and Dana could be doing grunt work.
Yeah. Yeah. So why have they just stuffed them in a cage just to get them out of the way because they're not
because they're useless.
Yeah. So we have these vehicles that are painted up. So do you remember in Dr. No?
I haven't seen Dr. No in a long time.
Okay, in Dr. No, on the island, Crab Key, where Bond is investigating, it's a private island owned by Dr. No, and people don't go there because there's dragons. And it turns out the dragon is a armored car with, like, a dragon's face painted on it and flamethrowers attached to it. And it's pretty hard to believe in 1963 that people, or 62 for Dr. No, that people would be convinced that that was a dragon on the island. Okay? It's pretty lame. It is a lame vehicle. There's an episode of Wild Wild West that uses a similar premise where somebody has taken a steam-powered, basically a car, and they paint a big face on it. It's got flames coming out of it. And you're all like, ooh, I'm scared. Monster. But that's set in the 1880s when people didn't know what a car was. So I could almost kind of maybe see that one terrifying people in the 1880s. I am having a very hard time when the Caliph of Crandor says, oh, well, this vehicle is just used to scare the more primitive of our visitors away. I'm asking myself, everyone who gets here comes by spaceship, for crying out loud. What primitive people are they trying to scare with a big toothy grin?
Uh-huh. Exactly. That's one of the things that I actually, I wrote that down even in my notes. It distressed me greatly when I saw that. I'm trying to find it was designed to frighten primitive people from underdeveloped worlds. Now, how would people from such worlds end up there? Any species capable of space travel should be sufficiently developed to not be afraid of something as silly as that.
Uh-huh.
But Villa, he was like, it's so pretty.
Villa, it's almost like there was a hypnotic force behind it. If they had said that, then Villa's behavior could have been a little forgivable.
It could have been, but he falls into that same...
Twice.
He falls into that, right as they're trying to make their escape. It happens again, but it serves no purpose, and it's waste. It's wasteful writing, and I hate wasteful writing.
Well, in which case, then you probably hate this episode because all of it was wasteful writing. I think that's really the takeaway here, is that this thing is kind of a wasteful bit of stuff. So we've already
including my time.
We've already explained that Callie shoots some walls, and then that releases the generators down. Callie shoots some walls, destroys the equipment. Everybody hops on the Liberator, and off they go into the wild blue, black yonder, I guess it were. And it's a funny thing. Callie is in this room with the big bearskin rugs and stuff and just walls. She tricks him into lowering the energy dampeners, so she's able to pull out her weapon, start shooting the walls. Happens to, in the two or three shots that she pulled, manages to destroy the energy dampening generator. And then she comes over to where there's a curtain, and behind the curtain is the Tharn. And the Tharn's like, no, you must not see me. You must not look at me.
Look at that man behind the curtain.
And Callie's like, I must look at you if I'm going to kill you. Remember, this is Callie the rebel.
She's the rebel fighter.
I have every reason to believe that she could kill somebody if it were the right circumstances. She pulls it back, and it's an old guy with a big bald head. Oh, see, time has had its course.
It's the Keeper of Trocken.
Yep. And then next scene, Callie's escaping, and they all get back on the Liberator, and they escape. And you ask yourself, did she kill him? And then a ship escapes, and she goes, oh, that must be the Tharn.
Great.
Maybe I should have killed him. Why didn't she? Why didn't she kill him?
I don't know.
That would have been much better if the Tharn ship had not escaped, and we were left with the question: did Callie kill him or not? But they didn't.
No, or she does kill him, but there's still a ship that escapes. You know, and then it's like,
said that must be the Tharn,
right?
I should have killed him. That takes away
all the
ambiguities.
Right.
Yeah. But if, you know, if the ship had escaped, maybe it was the Caliph or
probably the Caliph.
Or Groff or whatever.
Groff, I think Groff is dead.
Yes, Groff was dead. But yeah. So why did they do that? And why would they give her that line? I must see it so I can kill you. Just to turn around and not kill him. It was just, it's bad writing. It's just bad writing. So here's the one. And the Tharn doesn't allow computers. So he's got all these massive gravity equations that need to be done, and he's making them sit there and work them out with a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And Tarrant does have a perfect line. He's holds up his finger and he says, "What's this?
What is this?"
It's a finger, and it is better designed towards pushing a button than it is from holding a graphite writing stick, which is a good line and true.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I think definitely a good line and true. And maybe that's why the whole episode was written, just so that they could use that one line. But again, there's no payoff on this. Why doesn't the Tharn use computers? They sort of say you won't allow an intellect to challenge him, but really?
Well, at one point, I mean, I immediately...
Calculators would not do that.
No. I started to make a Doctor Who connection. I was thinking, well, maybe they were trying to make some sort of a comparison to Logopolis, how the Logopolitans did not like to use computers because they felt that the mind was the best computer, and maybe they're going to kind of go down that route, which would say that only the mind would be capable of grasping and working, you know, with gravitational field theorems.
Okay, so I will go with that.
But there wasn't said.
But I'll, with a caveat, in Logopolis, it wasn't that they felt that the human brain was better.
Oh, no,
they
no.
They specifically said it
yeah,
had
to a computer
be.
Would actually become affected
right.
by running those formulas.
Right. And if they had done that here, yes, that would be fine. But
they don't say that.
They're obviously just sort of trivial things. They just have to fill them all out. And you'd think, well, I don't know. It's just, again.
It's wasteful writing.
It was wasteful writing. It just gave him the opportunity for that scene. But it's, you know, he can't tolerate an intelligence that rivals his. Computers run the gamut. And even in the Blake 7 universe, they're not all Zen and Orac level.
Right.
So, again, if a desktop calculator is no way that would rival the Tharn. And nothing comes of it.
No, it's yet another...
It's a quirk
story
of the Tharn
element
that we doesn't lead anywhere.
Right. There, it's yet another item in the list of things for this episode where there's no payoff.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing I liked about the episode was, and it's just a stupid thing, and it's just one of those little tricks that writers can play, but I like the fact that the Caliph had a stick that could compel you. Well, if it didn't compel you to tell the truth, it certainly harmed you if you lied.
Right.
And in that, both Dana and Tarrant were able to truthfully obscure the existence or presence of Orac.
Well, it helped the fact that the Caliph had absolutely no clue regarding Orac's
nature,
yes. And it's just automatically assumed, I mean, that if the Tharn could, and I'm assuming that the Tharn is what detected the presence of Orac, if the Tharn could detect Orac, then obviously then Orac must be some sort of a biological life form.
You'd think that, but apparently he's afraid of calculators, so maybe that's...
But he doesn't know.
It's his detection that he can detect to Orac in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, who is he or she or something to that effect? And
well, maybe it's
Dana's
just
the answer is, you know, there has never been a person on board this ship named Orac. There is no person aboard this ship named Orac.
Right.
And never has been. True statement.
Yeah.
Didn't
There's
violate
no person.
The thing. I, you know, that I find amusing. I wonder if that, again, if that's all that the guy who was writing this story had going. Because he had a couple of little scenes that he thought oh, I like the thing about Tarrant with the buttons, and I like those things where you get to do the tell a truth but obscure it with a lie, because that's what Orak does. Earlier in the episode, he says, oh, that we're behaving normally with Newton's laws. What do you want? And then later on, Tarrant, what did they hit Tarrant with? They asked him for a couple questions.
How tall is Orak? Things like that.
And he says he's a dwarf. And they say, we don't think of him.
We don't think of him that way. What color is his hair?
He hasn't got
any.
And he follows it up with a bald dwarf.
We don't think of him in that way.
Yeah. Shouldn't be hard to find. Well, that's true. A bald dwarf probably wouldn't be that hard to find. The only thing is that when he asked him how tall he was, he put his hand up at about the level Orak was on the cart.
Uh-huh. And then he lowered it.
Now, would that be a lie? With, you know, because remember, the stick is monitoring for an actual lie. It's like, well, is that a lie or a falsehood? Or
well, I'm going to equate that to like a game of chess, where as long as you're holding onto the chess piece, it's still, you know, you can still move anywhere. His hand had not really stopped moving, so I'm stretching.
Yeah. So badly. That was the part I liked about the episode. I always like it when somebody has a clever thing that the audience is in on. It's like,
that was a good moment. Yeah. I will admit, I thought that was a very good moment too. But everything else about it, I thought was just dreadful.
Dreadful. Yes, I agree. This is not a good episode of Blake 7. And it looks like Mr. Follet is back again.
Oh, no.
In the fourth series with the episode Star Drive, which we will be getting to one of these days.
Yay! Wonderful. Can't wait.
Some interesting parallels that have crossed my mind between Star Drive and this episode. But anyway, I don't have anything else. I think we have talked for a remarkable length of time about...
For something that was just useless. You know, I'm looking at my final paragraph that I usually write when I feel the motivation. And I felt motivated to write a final paragraph on this in my notes. And all I simply said, you know, and I'm only looking at it now and I'm finding it amusing that some of the things that I said in our conversation, I without even remembering, I put in my final paragraph. One is that I said that while I found this episode to be an interesting one dealing only with the crew of the Liberator, you know, but like so many other episodes that have nothing to do with their battle against the Federation, this episode was an utter waste of time. It had nothing redeeming. And while the initial premise may have seemed interesting, what came out of it was rather dreadful and quite uninteresting. It is a poor episode. But I find it funny that when I wrote my little analysis, I used the word waste.
Yes, without the Federation as a foil, there's a little bit of lack of focus.
And this is not the first episode that we've had that's been a real departure. Where, I mean, it's like as standalone could get. We've had others.
Space opera. Yep.
Right. Space opera, precisely. That's what this was. This was just a standalone space opera, and Blake 7 does not do that well.
So, anyway, I don't have anything else.
I don't either.
I'm going to say, Ben, thank you for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure.
And listeners, I do hope you'll join us all again next time. On Fusion Patrol.
But what about the game?
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Leave us a review on iTunes, or stop by and visit us at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fusionpatrol. Our Twitter username is @fusionpatrol, or you can just send us a comment at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Come check out our new YouTube channel at youtube.com/fusionpatrol. Please, come join the conversation. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.